Hello and welcome to episode number 8 of WP Cafe, the show where we chat with WordPress professionals about practical solutions for solo and small WordPress development teams. If that sounds like you, then you can subscribe to the channel so that you don't miss a show. You don't have to smash the subscribe button like other YouTubers say. You can just gently press it if you like. If you do enjoy this episode, we'd also really appreciate you pressing that thumbs up button. So my name's Keith Devon, and today I'm joined by my co-host Mark Wilkinson and our guest Bill Erickson. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So if you're a WordPress developer building custom themes and trying to get your head around the challenges and opportunities that come with the new block editor, then this episode is for you. We'll be talking to Bill about how Gutenberg has changed his workflow, which default blocks he uses, and when and how he decides to reach for something a bit more bespoke, how he handles styling in the editor, when and how he uses block patterns, styles, and variations, and a lot more. So by the end of the show, we hope that you'll have more confidence to develop with Gutenberg as your editor of choice. So if you're watching this live, please say hello in the comments and tell us where you're watching from. Also, please ask questions and we'll do our very best to answer them live on the show. Okay, before we get into the questions, I'm sure we'd all like to know a bit more about our guest. Bill, can you please introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about your backstory with WordPress and what you're up to these days.
Yeah, so I'm a WordPress developer. I've been a freelance WordPress developer for about 15 years now. So I've been building sites on WordPress since before there was page as a post type. Everything was posts. At start of this year, I launched my new agency, Cultivate WP, which focuses on helping web publishers.
Very cool. Very cool. So we know you, Bill, through your website. We've never met personally, but Mark and I frequently reference your blog, which is a great resource for Gutenberg development and WordPress development in general. So we really recommend people check it out. And the very first episode we did, actually, of WP Cafe was about developing themes with Gutenberg, trying to get to the bottom of some of the kind of challenges. So this is a kind of a bit of a follow-on episode from that. And it's just great to have you on the show, having kind of referenced your material for so long.
That's great to get a
chance to pick your brain. So thank you very much for joining us and for joining us so early in the morning. I know, what time is it with you at the moment?
It's 7 a.m. now, so it's not too early, but the kids are still heading out the door to get to school right now.
Yeah, we had John James Jacoby on one episode. You can literally see the sun like rising behind him. He was up at like 6 in the morning or something. That was quite funny. All right.
That was with Elliot, wasn't it? He was in Australia, so we were spanned across the globe, weren't we?
Yeah, that was amazing. All right, should we get into some questions then? Get this conversation rolling. Mark, do you want to kick
Absolutely,
us off?
Yeah. So I guess one of the first things that you think about with block-based development is the design process. That's usually sort of the starting point for a web build. And therefore, I just wondered if you have any comments and, you know, how does block-based development, building blocks on pages rather than the old way of viewing it, how does that affect the design workflow that you take when you're building a website?
Yeah, so when we started using the block editor, I think it was, I don't know, what, 2 years or now? We started using it 2 or 3 months before it got merged into WordPress core. And so we were trying to figure out how to make sure that our design and dev process would work well for that. We realized, like me and I got together with my designers, we realized like this really lends itself well to an atomic design approach, which our designers were using already. So we just had to sort of guide their atomic design approach to start with core blocks and then make more complex elements that then use those core blocks. And so it was just a little bit of education on sort of what are the building blocks in Gutenberg, and then it just naturally flowed. So it went really well with their design process. And it also led me to no longer take on projects where our team didn't do the design and dev. So like I said, I've been doing this for like 15 years. For the first 10 or 12 or 13 of those years, for the most part, I was just a dev. And so people would bring me a design and then I'd build it. But with Gutenberg, it's really difficult to make a successful website if the design was not built in a way that considered the editing experience. And so I couldn't really deliver what I consider a successful project unless I can have my hands on that design process. And so once we moved to like everything being in the block editor, we also moved to, we have to do the design process to make sure those considerations are in place. But then once it's designed with that thought in mind, it really empowers the client to really manage the site that the way they want. So like not just single posts and single pages, but they're really rich pages, like their home pages and stuff. Like they can click edit and see a copy of their homepage that looks exactly like the front end and really interact with it, add new elements where they want and make it their own. So when it was designed and built to line up with the editor, it gives a really great experience. But then if it was designed slightly differently in that more page template approach, or every page is a little bit different, it just makes things way more complicated.
Okay, cool. So do you build the back end editor to be as much as you can to be the same as the way it looks on the front end? Are you taking that approach where both have to be
the same? Yeah, for the most part, we try and get it almost pixel perfect. So like we even want like all the content columns to be exactly the same so that as they're typing, they can see where the word breaks and stuff like that, which introduces some interesting things because we also use the block editor in lots of different contexts. So if the site has sidebars, we'll use the block editor for the sidebar. Because if like we're building all these blocks like call to action and email sign up, we want those same blocks to be in the sidebar as well. So then we have to add some admin body classes to give sort of information on the context. So then we can say, okay, on the sidebar post, make the block editor content area 300 pixels wide. So that it actually works as expected.
That's cool. Because we've taken that approach too. So do you create like a custom post type for sidebars essentially? And then
In more general, we create one called block areas. Yeah. And so we'll use that for like sidebar, after post, after archive or whatever, like any of the places before footer, any of the sort of more global areas where we want them to be able to insert blocks. And it's not just sort of like the main page of content.
Yeah. And then like on a particular page, would the client like choose a template to use that has certain of those block areas available to them? Is that the way it would work?
Kind of, yeah. So like we usually have like a layout selector. So like you want content sidebar or content or whatever. And so depending on that, the block area would appear. For the most part, we're not letting them like say whether they want the before footer area. So those are just sort of built into the themes. Like this is a global element. The sidebar is a global element if there is a sidebar present on the current page.
Yeah, cool. Just coming back to design quickly, I'm kind of interested because I definitely agree that taking a kind of Gutenberg first approach to design is beneficial from a kind of time scale and cost point of view. Is that kind of the primary reason, or were there kind of like data structure reasons why you kind of take that approach, or content management reasons or performance reasons or like just technical considerations?
It's all of the above. So yes, it makes things simpler when you're already building from what's there, but it also makes it simpler for the client to manage. Like really at the end of the day, I'm building on a CMS so that my clients can edit their content. If I'm able to use as much as what's there, then it'll just sort of naturally flow, or like, because they already have content that has headings and paragraphs and block quotes. And so we want to make sure we're making sure our stuff flows into what's there and they don't have to rebuild stuff. So the more you can leverage what's there, the easier the transition will be, faster development because it's less custom stuff, but then also just overall performance improvement. And it's funny that you bring that up. The two biggest priorities to most of our clients are performance and accessibility. So as I'm sure you're aware, there's huge emphasis on Google's core web vitals. Pretty much every prospect that comes to us brings that up in the initial call, and so we're building towards those targets. So we're running Lighthouse and PageSpeed Insights as we're building stuff, and by being able to build everything in Gutenberg and with our own custom blocks, we're able to see huge performance improvements versus page builders or the other sort of larger block plugins.
Interesting. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Is there any time where you've designed or you want to design something that you think, oh, that'll be really like difficult to build in the block editor, or because we've had that a few times. Or, although granted, we don't tend to do our own designs as much as you obviously taken that solely on yourself. We sometimes get designs given to us, and like 95% of it, you think that's fine, we can do that, and then there's just this little bit that you can't sort of get your head around as to how you can do it in the block editor. I just wonder if you come across that, and how do you broach that with clients? You know, you just say, well, we just need to scrap that and do it a different way,
That's one of the reasons why we do the design on our side, so that before the client sees the design, our dev team, so me and the other developers involved, we review the design and make sure that we're guiding it in a direction that works. So yeah, clients will request things that don't really apply well, or it could be hard to build. We'll try internally to get them as close to what would make sense for us to build. But then if it gets really complicated, we're like, hey, this is going to cost extra to build. This is going to slow down the site or whatever. Like, we give them the constraints and then let them make that decision. We also, when we're doing our projects pricing, we use ranges. And so it's a fixed bid for the discovery phase, but then a range for design and development. And so that gives us a little bit of flexibility. So as we're designing things, it's like, hey, we could go with this approach. It's going to increase the dev cost by 2,000, or we could go with a simpler one. It gives us a little bit more flexibility in guiding that process.
That's great.
That's good. Go on, Keith. You're gonna ask.
I can't remember what I was gonna ask. The moment's gone. It's fine.
It was obviously not very important then.
Yeah.
So, but just lastly on design, then, I guess this means that your designers really need to know Gutenberg. They need to understand how it works to be able to sort of design to those constraints, if you like. Is that? Would you say that's true? Or can anyone design?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I think there's like a basic level of knowledge, like knowing what blocks are available, knowing how things are inserted, that's necessary. We also have a lot of institutional knowledge about how we use different blocks. So one of the things that we do is like we try and make our custom blocks as small and modular as possible. So like I try to avoid big full width sections as custom blocks. Like what I want is all of our full width sections to be full width groups. So then you can have the core backgrounds and stuff, and then just use custom blocks for whatever little thing, like maybe an icon block, so that they can insert an icon here, but then they can still use a heading and paragraph and a button block. So we try and use as much native stuff as possible. We also use the alignment options. We sort of map that to the design grid. So like in the editor, when you select, so like we have two separate grid width. This is a little bit in the weeds, but like there's typically two different grid widths. There's like the full site grid, which is like 1168 or whatever. And then there's like the content area, which is like 736 or something. And so when you're inserting blocks, if you use the wide alignment, it makes it 1168 regardless of the layout. So like if you're in a narrow content, you can bust out of that with the wide. Or if you're on like a full width content that's using that full width grid, you can insert something with a center alignment, and then that uses the narrower 736 grid. So by sort of tying these core WordPress alignments back into design, like giving the designers the tools to say, okay, content needs to be this wide, big elements need to be this wide, full width elements go 100% the screen. Like we give them these few constraints, and they're able to create what they need. I found that the most effective way of helping my designers understand Gutenberg was redesigning their site in Gutenberg. They designed their site and we built it in Gutenberg, and then they got in there and had to edit their content and realize where their design sort of fell down, or like, oh wow, this is more difficult than I thought, or wow, now that I see how this stuff works. And so it does help to get your hands dirty in there, and I find like your own personal site is the best way to sort of experience that.
That's a good idea. Yeah, and then they're also using it, aren't they, as well to understand how it works,
they're using it and they're getting to know how all this stuff works, and then they get to see as WordPress changes how the editor is improving or changing.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, cool. I think that covers designy a bit. Let's move on to the types of blocks and things. So I guess the first one is obviously WordPress provides loads of default blocks. Yep. And we just wondered how you handle all of those blocks. Do you allow the client to use all those blocks? Do you disable some blocks? Do you make sure that all of those are styled? I just wondered how you go about doing that with the default blocks.
Yeah, so we rarely disable blocks unless we're going to create our own custom block that does it. So for instance, I think there's like a search block. We remove that and then add our own one because our custom search block uses the searchform.php file that's in the theme so that the search form that we use anywhere looks the same as the one that's in the block. So that's kind of the instance where like we would remove it. Or if we're creating a custom block that matches up with it. So like there's the media and text block. And if we're creating a content image box block that's like the same, we'll remove that so they don't accidentally use it. But for the most part, we leave all the core blocks in there. We style the basic ones like headings, paragraph, block quote, stuff like that. And I just try to avoid using the more complex ones. Like I very rarely use the columns block just because it gives them a little bit too much design control in the editor. So like they can like drag the column around and like make custom sizes that then overrides everything that's in the theme. So in those instances, we're usually like we'd have a content image block where they specify the content and the image, and then the theme handles the columns and the responsiveness. So for the more advanced stuff, those are usually handled through custom stuff, but the core blocks are still there.
That's really interesting what you say about columns, because they're such a challenge.
And it changes. I feel like we for a while we were using the columns block, and I had some CSS that could override it, and then a new version of Gutenberg comes out, and all my CSS doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. They are super fiddly. I tried, I think I said this before, I tried a while ago to kind of rewrite the column CSS so that it kind of snapped to like grids and things like that, but it's just, it's really fiddly, and I find them really actually hard to use as a user as well. You know, making like dragging things into the right column and just it's and styling them on the back end to make them look like the front end. Everything about columns seems to be difficult. So. But interesting that you felt like you could get rid of them, because I kind of feel like they're usually a really essential part of what we do. But I might actually like look back at some of the sites we've built and some of the designs we've worked with to see if maybe there was a different way that we could have handled it. Because I kind of just use columns just because they're there, and you kind of see it as you think, well, yeah, columns will fix that, but actually they are a pain.
So a few things there, because most of our clients are publishers and most of them have like 80 to 90% mobile traffic, we have a very mobile first design approach. Like some of our clients don't even look at the desktop mockups of their site because they know only mobile is what's going to be seen. And so columns is less important. And that's why we'll have like narrower content areas, but then everything's just single column. Mm-hmm. And also the times when we do have sort of multiple columns, it's usually like richer content experiences where it's like content on one side and then some form of media, like an image or a gallery or something over there. And so in those cases, we'll use ACF, let them manage the media through ACF, and then have the inner blocks for the actual content. So there's only like really one column of actual content that needs the block editor. And so we can use the inner blocks for that.
That's great.
Cool. Yep. Interesting. Yeah, because columns, I know, was a big headache for Keith. He had lots of sleepless nights over columns and getting to work, so maybe that's something we could revisit as well.
Well, I wonder as well, just Bill, you mentioning ACF and inner blocks there. I wonder if how difficult it would be to roll our own kind of fairly limited column block, where you just choose two columns, three columns. There.
The problem there is WordPress core only supports one inner blocks in a block. And so if you have two columns, you can't have two inner blocks. Yeah.
There, okay.
That's the inner blocks.
Damn it.
We've got quite a few questions in the chat, and a lot of them are about kind of this next section, which is looking at third-party blocks and how you actually create your own blocks. So we'll deal with the big one first, I guess, is how do you create your own blocks? You've mentioned that designs sometimes require custom blocks. You can't deliver this with what we've got with WordPress. So how do you actually build those custom blocks currently?
So we use ACF for everything. For a while, I was exploring different tools like Carbon Fields and whatever the plugin was that now is Genesis Custom Blocks. So there's a lot of block building tools on the market. I feel ACF just has a much deeper, richer, because it's been around forever. Like it's has a much fuller feature set. And it's also really extensible as a developer. Like they have tons of hooks and filters. So it really lets us customize it the way we want, because a lot of times it's not just building the block. It's also determining how the data, like what options are available in there. So like you have a block where they can select icon and a title. Well, you want that list of icons to be pulling from the SVGs that are in the theme. And so having like ACF where you can filter all that stuff and pre-populate, it works really well. So yeah, all our custom blocks we build with ACF. And recently, like I mentioned, most of our clients are publishers. We find that we build the same sort of set of blocks across many sites. So we'll have like a post listing block, a term listing block, table of contents block. So now we've packaged all of that into our own premium plugin, which isn't for sale anywhere. It's just a way for us to deliver that to clients. Yeah. And then so as we make improvements to it, we can push those out to everyone rather than having to go update all the sites. So we used ACF in there, but a lot of our like core blocks we build into a plugin, and then site-specific ones we build into the theme.
That's an interesting approach. Yeah, it means you can push updates to everyone, doesn't it? If you make changes and improvements to things, everyone can get them, which is good. So have you never tried, you've never built blocks using like React and like the native JavaScript way?
I tried. So early on, like when I was first getting started with Gutenberg, before Gutenberg was merged into core, I took Zach Gordon's course, and then I built a few custom blocks, and then everything changed, and then I started taking the course again, and it was just... I'm not a JavaScript developer. I'm not a React developer. I think a good analogy is metaboxes here. So like if you're building a plugin that's for public consumption that's going to be distributed, it makes sense to build things natively with React and remove any dependencies. But when you're sort of building one-off things for a client, like something that takes 5 minutes with ACF could take 5 or 10 hours if you're building natively with React. And so we don't build our custom site options or meta boxes or stuff like that for a client site hard coded. We also don't build our own blocks from sort of scratch.
Yeah, I think we're the same, and I think many people are the same. I will come to you in a minute, Keith. I just wanted to mention the people in the chat who have asked that question. So I think that was Ben and Joe, I think, mentioned that as well, asking about ACF. So it looks like ACF is the way to go. We use ACF as well. It's nice and simple, just for the reasons you've suggested. Keith, you want to come in?
Yeah, I was just going to ask on the ACF point. You mentioned earlier about trying to make the back end experience as close to the front end as possible, like pixel perfect if possible. How do you get that to work with ACF? I mean, is it using like a preview mode or something, switching between like a preview, or do you have like the meta boxes in the sidebar? How do you kind of set up your ACF custom blocks?
So it depends on what type of interaction the client needs. I sort of default to preview mode, both so that the editor looks correct, but also because we use inner blocks a lot for our custom blocks, and that requires preview mode. But let's say the content image block, so it's in preview mode, they click it, they can type the content here, and then in the sidebar they can add the image, and then it updates the image that's in the preview area. If we're doing something more complex, like using like the repeater field or something like that, maybe like sort of a tabbed content area or something, then we'll use the auto mode so that when they select it, it switches sort of like the ACF meta box view, but then when they unselect it, like it renders as it should be.
That's really cool. Have we used that yet, Mark? I don't think we have.
Possibly. I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember. Really, I think I like the fact that you can do stuff on the right-hand side for the simple blocks. And then, but like you say, when you're doing a repeater or something more complex, it's just not big enough, that area, is it, to actually get all the stuff in? And you need to put it in the main bit. And then, like you said, the previews are good, or the auto mode, that works really well, which is cool. Quickly then, my questions, we've covered in a block, so that's good. So next thing is about styling those blocks then. So obviously Gutenberg provides styles for its core blocks. So I just wondered, do you use that? Do you build on top of that? Or do you just wipe that from scratch and style them all yourself per project? Or do you have like some core styles that you use it yourself? I just wondered how you approach that sort of problem.
Yeah, I try and minimize the amount of undoing of Gutenberg stuff as possible, just because like I don't want to fight that uphill battle. But there are times when Gutenberg is kind of weird, where it applies something to the back end but not the front end. Like I think like block quote sometimes has like a border on the left in the editor but not on the front end. So what we do is we start like SAS makes this very easy. We have our like our styles broken down into different files, and so all of our block styles go into like both the front end, but then also an editor style sheet. And so that takes care of like 99% of things, just making sure that whatever styles you wrote on the front end also apply in the back end. Mm-hmm. And then I have a Gutenberg partial for any Gutenberg specific overrides. So like the, like I said, like the block quote when that gets messed up. Or another thing I find really useful is for the more advanced like ACF style blocks, like let's say my post listing where it's going to like output a list of like four posts or whatever. I don't want the client accidentally clicking on one of the posts and then going to that post from the editor. So for any of the blocks that have links like that, inside the Gutenberg editor, I set it like position relative and then set a pseudo element that's like zindex 99 that covers the whole thing so that they can't accidentally click. Like they can click to select it and then manage the options, but they don't go to that post.
That is a good idea. I've had that problem where you've got like a video or something and like to select a block, they have to play the video almost.
Yeah.
Like, no, we don't want them to do that. That's a really good idea.
That is
really
a good idea. That's really clever. Yeah.
Yeah, clever one.
So you you do enqueue the Gutenberg style sheet as it is, and then you make any changes that you need to.
We leave the block styles enqueued as is and make our changes to it. You could and it doesn't matter so much for the simpler blocks, but like for the more complex ones, like if they do insert columns, they want that to work. And so I found it for a while I was dequeuing all the block styles and trying to handle it all myself. But Gutenberg changes too much, both with its core styles, but then also adding new blocks that I didn't consider when I designed the site. And so to sort of future-proof it to make sure whatever they insert in the editor works, you really just have to include the block styles and then add some overrides where it makes sense.
Yeah, that's cool. I think I tried dequeuing the Gutenberg styles and kind of ruling my own, but I've since regretted that decision. So I think we're going to go back to an approach very similar to yours, where we accept as much of it as possible and then just make the overrides. I think that's a less painful approach going forward for sure.
Yeah. And on the front end then, using SAS, do you just compile those into one CSS file and then load that, or do you go like an approach whereby I'm only going to load the block quote CSS if there's a block quote block on the page?
For the most part, we just use a single style sheet. In some contexts where like there's a really complex style thing, or if it like relates to JavaScript. So let's say like we have a slider block. It's only used one place on the site, but it has a ton of CSS and JavaScript associated. Then we'll only enqueue that when that block exists on the page. But for the most part, like all of our styles are in like queued into the main CSS file. There's also some tools that you can use for CSS tree shaking. So like if you're building an AMP site, it'll automatically reduce the CSS. It'll make a per page CSS file that only includes the styles on that page. And so like you'll see like 75% reduction in your styles, but then you have all the other negatives of AMP. And there are some plugins on the market coming out that I've beta tested that do a similar thing, but for non-AMP sites. So I played with that a bit, but I found that because of our very atomic design approach, like there's few styles that like make sense to be totally pulled out, because everything is sort of built from the same little building blocks and they're like apply to all the major pages.
Yeah, that was interesting. Because we've dabbled with the idea of just loading the CSS for specific blocks as and when that's used. So we've never tried it, have we? In theory, it seems to be a good idea, but like you said, you've just mentioned some problems with it, which is interesting.
And so I've found that like in actual real world testing with like PageSpeed Insights and Lightspeed, even though having lots of little style sheets are supposed to be better, it actually makes things slower. And so having it all in one style sheet, I found that the critical CSS that WP Rocket generates, if you already have very lean CSS, that actually doesn't have any performance benefit and introduces CLS issues because some things might not load that they weren't aware of. And so, for the sites that we build that are like really lean and like the style sheets are only a few kilobytes anyway, we just load that in the header and then we have like zero CLS issues and we're only loading one file rather than lots of smaller assets.
Interesting. Cool. Good advice to try that. where are we up to? Let's have a look. Oh, yeah, block patterns and styles and variations and things like that. So this is something we've played with a little bit. I just wondered if you've used them, if you found a use for them, how's that gone, really?
Yeah, so block styles we use quite a bit. We usually and that's one of the areas where we remove a lot of stuff that Gutenberg adds. So we'll remove all of the button block styles, and there's a few other ones where we remove all the styles and then add our own. Yeah. So we use that a lot to give the client the ability to change things up.
Is that done in JavaScript or is that done in PHP?
Yes, that's done in JavaScript. So I have an editor.js file where it's just like unregister block style, here's all this stuff, or unregister block type, here's the stuff for that. So that is a JavaScript based thing, but it's pretty simple. Once you have the code, you can just sort of copy paste. Yep. And then when it comes to block patterns, I haven't used it too much with clients. I find that the UI for finding block patterns isn't as easy as they would hope, like most of our clients can't find it. But when we recently built my agency website, because everything's just a page, like even our case studies are just normal pages, I created a block pattern for how our case study should be. So my designer could click that, it would pre-populate it with all the blocks, and then they could fill it in. So we've used it internally a bit. We might use it a bit more on some clients, like if they have sort of repeatable landing page style things where they need all of these blocks in a certain order.
Yeah, we were thinking landing pages for like specific layouts, and that might be good just to sort of like drop the layout in the page and then off you go and create the
I think it has a lot of value. I found that a lot of our clients, they will just duplicate a page that they like when they want that kind of layout. And that UI seems simpler to them than the block patterns. So we might start pushing block patterns a little more. Also, the fact that everything has to be code-based makes it a little difficult. But there's a plugin that I used recently where it sort of exposes a UI where you can like take a reusable block and then save it as a pattern, and then it becomes accessible. And so that's something that I've installed on a client site where they said, how can I reuse this sort of section?
Interesting. That sounds cool. Yeah, that sounds good.
So there's block styles, which we've used quite a lot, but there's block variations as well, which we've used less. Do you use variations, and if so, how do you decide if something is a style or a variation?
Can someone remind me of what the difference is?
Yeah, I haven't used block variations, and I'm not sure what the difference is.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. Uh-oh, it's on me to try to explain something I know very little about. So what I think whenever you build a columns block, whenever you like add a columns block to a page, for example, I know we're saying maybe we won't ever use columns again, but if we did, we add a columns block to a page and it says which, do you want it to be three columns or two columns or a third, two thirds? Those are variations, and there is a variations API. And for me, it's very similar to styles, but I just don't know the difference. So, and variations, that they're exposed in different ways. They're exposed like that whenever you first create a block, or there's another UI. I can't remember exactly what it is. We did use this, Mark. I can't remember what for when I discovered it. And I remember I tweeted it, started a bit of an argument on Twitter because unintentionally, but I basically said, where's the documentation for this? Because it looks awesome. And everyone's like, there is
I remember
write
that.
It yourself. I was like, I don't know how to use it. I can't write it myself.
I haven't used it. I mean, I just Googled it real quick. It does look very similar to block styles, but just a different UI. And it like exposes it differently. I haven't played with it. I mean, my one complaint about block styles is the inability to use two block styles at the same time.
Exactly.
And so maybe this might help with that. And so you can have like a style and a variation, and then they can combine. I haven't had a chance to play with that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to get at, because it came up yesterday. I think I was building a list, so I was using a list block, and I've created a list block style for like stars for the bullets for the bullet points. But the client wanted to make the list a larger font size, and because it's not a paragraph and lists don't have font size control, he couldn't do it. So I was wondering, maybe I could use a variation as well as the style and work with it with, I don't know. But yeah, it's interesting because I don't know what is supposed to be a variation and what's supposed to be a style. The style's kind of intuitive, but then what's a variation? So yeah, something to look at, I guess. And There's your next blog post, Phil.
I need to add that to my Gutenberg stuff. But yeah, oftentimes when I need, because like block styles are literally just a CSS class. Yeah. If I need two block styles, I just add the extra CSS class in advanced. And so like in those instances, it's not very client friendly, but it's like if you want it large and stars, just type is style large down in the class and it'll also be large and stars.
Yeah, yeah, you could just create more and more styles with combinations, couldn't you? But like,
yeah, it's like massive, large stars.
Yeah.
It sounds to me as though variations might be good if you've got, like, you need to make a decision before we show the next lot of options, almost. So, you know, if you, I don't know, like a layout, and then you get a different set of fields if you've chosen this variation rather than, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Don't know, maybe that's not, but that's not kind of what Columns does, I guess, because you still got the same UI, don't you? But
I can't think where else it's used except for Columns, but yeah, it's an interesting.
Is it in the embed one where you choose which embed to use? Maybe, I don't know. I know you can just paste the URL, so I don't ever use the embed block, as in like add the block and then paste. But I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You could get a different block. I'm not sure.
Cool. Something to
research to do there, I think. Yeah, definitely.
All right. What are we up to with the questions?
We've kind of covered the next one, which is custom style in the editor. So obviously we, you know, matching the editor as much as we can on the front end. Yeah. We've tried to do that with some good success, but some things just don't quite work. I think some things you mentioned, like, you know, covering up those clickable areas that you don't want people to click is a really good little tip, actually. So that'd be good. I'll look at that. So what opportunities do you think Gutenberg has given theme developers that they didn't have perhaps before the block editor was out and about?
I think it just, I mean, by making the default editor more powerful, it lets us move away from sort of like the page template paradigm, where it's like we have a pricing page and a team page and like all of these pages that have their own unique design with all that functionality. Now we can sort of like separate that and just create them as individual blocks, which then makes those elements reusable elsewhere. So we've found by like sort of moving beyond the sort of page design model to the more atomic approach, it really just empowers our clients to build richer content later on, because like I want the pricing table, but I want it on my landing page. And so it's like, well, you can't do that because it's tied to that page. Well, now the block can be used anywhere. And so any block we used on the homepage, they can then use inside of posts and stuff.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it, that way? I guess that brings us on to some of the challenges then that the block editor gives, because obviously it like you say, it's allowed theme developers to really branch out and put everything everywhere. Does that bring any challenges in terms of styling and things like that, like everything's got to work with everything? So I just wondered if you'd come across any of that. I know we've had some issues with like spacing issues when you've got backgrounds on things and not on other things, and I just wondered if you've come up across any solutions you might have.
Yeah, so, I mean, it definitely introduces a lot of challenges beyond what a normal WordPress editor, because you sort of have all the baggage of this richer editing experience that you need to make sure keeps working. And so I think that's just one of the areas where, like, as you build stuff, like, this is where maintaining your own starter theme makes a lot of sense. So as you figure out problems, you can then bring it there, and then it's sort of solved, specifically around, like, backgrounds and stuff. Like, we use the group block heavily, and then anytime the group block has the has background class, we add top and bottom padding to that section. And then anytime you have two full width blocks, like group blocks that have has background, the second one has negative margin so that they're touching. So that's sort of like global styles that we use across all our projects. And then like when a client wants, let's say you have an alternating like white and gray section, we don't need a white background, but you want the padding in that section to match the one that has that. So then we add it to a group, set the background color to white, and then that gets the padding they need while maintaining the visual structure. So it's little tricks like that that you learn, like when I'm registering the theme, like the Gutenberg color palette, make sure you include white so that they can duplicate the padding when they're doing alternating sections.
That's clever. Yeah. That's a really good idea. Yeah,
it's not quite intuitive, is it, for a client? So I want a white background, because obviously they think they've got a white background, presuming that the background of the site obviously is white. It's just, so it's a little more different to that, but anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a bit of a learning curve, and I think that's when we I mean, before Gutenberg, when I delivered sites, like I'd send it to him for review, I'd have a bullet list of like, here's the different things you should check out. Gutenberg is such a visual editor, and a lot of the interfaces fairly hidden unless you know where to look at it, that we shifted to 100% video-based training. So like when we deliver a site to a client, there's usually like a dozen or 20 videos walking them through different aspects, both of all of our custom blocks, but then also the way we use the Gutenberg block editor. So we have a whole video on groups and how to use them for backgrounds and for paddings and stuff and alignments and page layouts. So like we sort of Gutenberg is sort of a blank canvas where you can take it in the direction you want. We want to educate them on how our design decisions were affected by the editor. And so like we use the alignment options different than another developer might. So we want to make sure you're aware of how we use that.
And is that like a suite of videos that is essentially the same for all your clients, but what with custom ones for the custom blocks, or do you just do those for fresh for every client?
I do them fresh for every client. Like I have a list of the common videos that I do. And so I just make like run through that list. I do a custom one because it's all in the editor and the editor looks like their site. And so it wouldn't make much sense to have a video that was for like someone else's site. So like it's, I have to record fresh videos every time.
Cool. Keith?
Yeah, tell me if you've already covered this. But you mentioned about obviously having kind of standard styles that you used for like group blocks and things to kind of cover these common spacing issues and things like that.
Yep.
Do you have a starter theme? I think you mentioned a starter theme. Do you have your own custom starter theme?
So I have a few starter themes online. None of them are really up to date. I have a private starter theme that I use on our projects, we might be making that public now. Like the starter theme is called Cultivate, so like I was keeping it private until we launched the agency. It also has a lot of very specific stuff for us built in, so it might not make as much sense for someone who's not building a bunch of food blogs because it has a bunch of stuff for like WP Recipe Maker and things like that.
Sure.
So it's very specific to our needs, but yeah, I might be able to at some point make that available. But the starter themes, like I have EA Starter and EA Genesis Child are the two public starter themes. And for the most part, they have all of the same sort of core Gutenberg stuff in it. So like the editor styles and things like that.
And do you use that as a parent theme or a starter theme, as in do you kind of just build on top of that, or do you create a child?
Yeah, I use it as a starter theme.
Yeah.
So like first thing is we rename it to the client name and start modifying it from there.
Yeah. Yeah. The challenge, I think, like we've tried to do that in the past, and the challenge has always been just to make sure that you keep updating that starter theme. Because obviously you start with something and it's great because you've kind of built it and it's all nice and lean and useful and modern. And then you build a client site on it, and then you kind of make a bunch of changes
loop back. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you loop? Like, are you good at that, or is that something you struggle with as well? Like, I'd find that really interesting. Like, how do you keep it up to date? Because we've kind of struggled with that.
Yeah. So I lean towards keeping stuff out of the starter theme because I want to keep it lean, and I don't want to have to remove a bunch of stuff as I'm building it for clients. But then like, all of our projects are version controlled and in GitHub and stuff. And so when I find myself going back and referencing things from older projects, so I'm like, what was that like unregistered block type thing that I was using? I search GitHub, it shows me the projects. And then if I find myself like pulling something from previous projects multiple times, then I move it to the starter theme. So yeah, I don't have, or as I'm building something, like I notice like, oh, Gutenberg update, now our group blocks are broken, I better fix that. So if I'm recognizing the moment that it's going to affect everything, I'll make the update there. But usually it's like a after the fact. I find myself copying and pasting this all the time. I might as well put it in there now.
Do you find that because you've specialized a bit now with your new agency, I don't know how long you've been kind of on that kind of niching route, but do you find that it helps to have a niche whenever it comes to kind of having a collection of tools that are, you know, useful and easier to keep up to date because you're using them more often? Is that a benefit?
Yeah, definitely. It's funny. I've been in this sort of niche for about 2-ish years now. We built it's basically, it's a really small community. So we built one really large food blog, and then five of her friends hired us, and so we did six back to back. And then we sort of became known in this known in this space as the people that build really fast websites for those high traffic sites. And so like, I don't market myself necessarily for that, and I've even sort of stripped all the publisher related stuff from my site, because I want Cultivate to be lead gen for publishers, and then my site to be lead gen for everything else.
Yeah.
But it's still like 80% of our work. But yeah, being in a niche definitely helps, because it allows us to, like, by solving the same problem over and over, we can sort of dive deep and get a little bit more detailed into that. And again, like I said, I've been packaging the stuff that's applicable to all these projects into a plugin, so that then I can loop back around and update everyone else. But even for the stuff that's not like that, by working on the same niche over and over, our core theme has really become refined, as opposed to like completely different clients with completely different tool sets, and trying to learn them in the moment, and then just like that knowledge just goes away because it's never going to be relevant again. Like some random MLS system for some realtor over there, and it's like, I'll never need to know that again.
Makes a lot of sense.
A couple of questions from YouTube. So Chris says, any chance you can share a sample of one of these client tutorial videos? So I'll leave that with you. I think that'd be super useful, actually, to see what you do.
Yeah, I could drop some of those in. I'm not sure where's the best place for me to add notes to this after the fact. Maybe a YouTube comment or something.
Question, probably a comment on YouTube would be the best place. That'd be great if you could. That'd be super. Yeah, so there you go, Chris. He'll put one of those in. And X Salm says, how would you create a Gutenberg block on a headless WP site? I wouldn't know, because I don't use headless.
I don't do headless, I don't think it would be any different than it is now, because like you would just register the block as usual, and then you'd be using Gutenberg or ACF to create the block in the editor, and then your headless thing is going to have to interpret that data and render it. And so I've never done that part of it. One thing that I would be wary about is all of the fields in ACF are just sort of stored as comments. So that's one of the reasons why we really lean towards using inner blocks as much as possible, because then that's actual content in there. So like if ACF gets disabled or the theme changes and they don't have that block type registered anymore, all that content goes away if it was just like you had a title, subtitle, description field. But if it's actual text, it'll still appear in the markup there. For things like table of contents, like that parses the markup, but if all that stuff is just sort of custom fields in the block, that won't be seen. I haven't done any headless stuff, so I'm not sure what the process is of converting the ACF markup into the actual like rendered HTML, but it's probably the same as it is for all the other blocks.
I guess there's functions that parse it and things, so
like parse blocks or whatever, and render block.
We've not really had any experience with that, so hope that helps anyway. But there we go. Keith.
Yeah, there's another question, a couple of questions actually, from Mike Ellis. I'm going to add one onto the screen now. First one, he says, what to do about richer data? We do a lot of quite detailed stuff with post meta right now. So this is actually something that Mark and I talk about a lot, is when do you create a custom post type and then reference that from within a block rather than just adding that data directly to a block. Do you have a kind of thought process or that you go through, Bill, whenever you come up against things like that? So just an example for people could be, there's a Meet the Team page on a website. So you could create a post type called, people, add everybody as a separate post in there and then like pull in that data using a block maybe, or you could just build that page up with blocks, either custom blocks or native blocks. So there's like throughout a project we find that there's lots of those decisions to be made, and I just wonder, Bill, how you go about making that kind of decision.
So I am actually looking because I did that exact example. My site, we built a Meet the Team page. And so rather than trying to build like a custom post type and then using metadata for everything, we just use the normal block editor. And so like we have a block pattern for like what should a team member page look like. Like use a like page header block for the header area and then stuff like that. And so this is where parse blocks and render blocks comes in really handy. So I'm not sure if there's anywhere I can paste code in here, but for our team listing, I'm literally querying all the sub pages of the team page. And then for each one of them, like to get like the name is going to be the post title, but then the subtitle, what I'm doing is parsing the blocks, finding the page header block, and then pulling out the HTML of that because I know that's where I'm putting the title. And so so rather than having to store it all as metadata, as long as the sort of block structure on the page is predictable, you can pull that out. And we've done similar things like on case studies or whatever. Like if you want to pull out the testimonials, you can just go through like parse the blocks, find the block quote, and if that exists, then you can render that block quote. So if that's your only need is to be able to pull out bits of data, I would lean towards using the block editor for everything and then parsing the blocks as needed. Now, if you need to actually query that data or display it differently, like an events calendar or something, like that makes sense to store it as a post type. So then you can like sort it by event date and things when they pass, they can move off the list. So if actual queries are involved, then I would probably lean towards having it as metadata. That is one area that I wish, and I've requested it a few times, and I'm hoping Elliot adds it, but one area that I wish ACF would improve would be the ability to, as you're creating a custom block, select certain fields and say, save this also as post meta. So like when I'm doing like my team member and I have the team member like subtitle or whatever, save this as post meta so then I can access that later and then I can query for everyone who's developer or something. So it would be really useful. And it's capable, like core blocks can do that. And if you take Zach Gordon's course, like he shows you how do you save block data as post meta. But it's just not a capability in ACF at the moment that I'm aware of.
Sounds good. I think the example we use with people is we do a bit of with recruitment sites. So often they want to meet the team page, but they also then want to have the different person attached to the certain jobs. So you've got to query the right person and then show the information with the job. So I've tend to gone for the post type approach for that. But it's an interesting suggestion you make there about parsing the block content. That would probably work as well. But like I said, querying is probably best to have a post type. So.
And another thing that we've done is like I'll create a site options page where we can select key types of data. So like select the our team page and you select that in the site options. And then when I need to query for people, I can go to the site option to get the ID of that page and then get the children. So that way you're not sort of dealing with hard-coded stuff, but you also don't necessarily need a custom post type if it's just all the sub pages of this section.
Interesting. Any other questions, Keith, that you found? I think I've covered
There was another one
hatch.
from Mike, but we had covered it pretty much. It was about, that was just about using ACF flexible fields and things for landing pages. Haven't pulled any other questions out yet. I
I
think we
think that
should
was
wrap up
all
soon,
I
probably.
came in. And just the last point for me was obviously on this debate of custom post types and pages. And I know you mentioned you just built a site where you'd use all pages. Was that your own site, sorry, where you said you'd done that without any using any custom post types?
Yeah, I think our case studies is a custom post type, but the editor is still just the Gutenberg block editor, so there's nothing unique to it. It's just so that we can have the archive.
Right, because I've often thought of that now with the block editor. Like you say, you've got this, where you can build pages of different blocks. Do we actually need custom post types anymore? Can everything just be pages? Maybe the blog can be posts, and we can do it that way. I'm not sure whether
I
you've got
think
any
it, I
thoughts on
think
that.
post types still serve a role. Basically, anytime you need to have dynamic archives or query by certain things, it's useful to have it that way. But yeah, I'd say 5 or 6 years ago, I was using custom post types a lot more heavily. Basically, any like we used pages for simple content. Any richer content, like team members or whatever, we would use as a custom post type. But now with the block editor, since the core editor is so much richer, we've gone the other way and rarely use post types unless it really makes sense, like events or case studies or something where you want that dynamic archive.
Yeah, makes sense. Cool, good. Right, I think we'll wrap it up there. I think that's been a really good discussion and learnt lots, actually. Lots to go away with and have a practice out. That's good.
Yeah, it's been great,
Hopefully
Will.
everyone's
Thank you
been
so much.
has got the
Yeah,
same, but
thanks for
thanks
having
for
me.
that. Where can people find you on the web? And if you want to go and find out more about your
Yeah.
services and stuff?
Yeah, you my personal site is billerickson.net. As you mentioned, I have a blog where I've written a lot of articles about Gutenberg and other stuff. And then my agency site is cultivatewp.com.
Excellent. Cool. So definitely going to have a look at those. And certainly the blog on billerickson.net is a superb resource for Gutenberg development. So if you are doing that, you've probably already found it when you've Googled things. So, but I can't recommend it enough. It's certainly helped me out a lot when I've been doing some development. So yeah, thanks again. Again, please do subscribe to the YouTube channel if you want to listen to more episodes of WP Cafe. We'll have another one coming up next month. We're not quite sure what the topic's going to be yet. And if you have any suggestions, then please do let us know of the things you'd like us to cover, because I'm sure we can try and get some guests on that are experts in that area, and we'll see what we can do. So thanks once again to Bill, and those of you tuned in on YouTube, thanks for your questions, and that's all for now. Thanks for joining us. We will see you next month.